You're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Hey, welcome to Boggy Talk. And as promised, it is the much anticipated recap of the Southern Baptist Convention. But before we dive into that, I'm going to say hey to James, who literally is just back from Indy and ready to just hash it all out and debrief and counsel and deconstruct. No, just kidding.
I haven't taken this hat off in a week.
That's right.
Just kidding.
Right. So. How are you and how was it?
So yeah, we're pre-recording this. So I literally got back today. I've been up since 2:30 a.m. our time. Woo-hoo! So I've been up for 14 hours after 4 hours
early.
Of sleep. So yeah. It was good. It was good. Overall, it was good. That would be, the thing we probably won't talk about is spending time. Just getting to see a lot of people that I don't see that much who are friends in ministry, and then spending some more intimate time with some of the local friends who went is probably the best part. And Indianapolis was a good city.
It is
for a convention.
Yeah, it's not big, but it's not small.
Yeah, it's for the convention. The convention, there's like a ton of hotels right there and a ton of restaurants. So that was like
that's very good. Convenient.
Because if there's not a ton, they get super crowded because Baptists eat.
Yeah, they do eat. That's for sure. I mean, it's kind of like last year in New Orleans. There's a lot of stuff right there, but you still had to walk.
And it was hot.
It was hot. It was like 4,000 degrees.
It was 48 degrees Monday morning in Indianapolis.
That sounds amazing. I mean, we complain about that in Florida when it is 48 degrees, but right now
I was freezing.
It sounds amazing.
I did not dress appropriately.
Sounds amazing. Because
how are you, man? Holding down the fort.
48 degrees sounds amazing because I've been sweating it out in kids clubs this week.
Yeah, it's been hot.
It has been wonderful. It's been hot and there's been a lot of gnats. That's one thing everyone said is like everywhere there's gnats, like all over Niceville. And
interesting.
Somebody said that the gnats were sent to us by Bill Gates. That was a literal quote from
Concerned Citizens in Iceland.
No, from someone this week to a staff member. They said that. And we were like, what?
Are they a member of this church?
She didn't know, but that someone said it in this area.
Wow.
So, yeah. So
wow.
I didn't know that that was a thing, but apparently that is one of those theories that's out there.
How are you?
I'm okay. It's been a full week. It has been. And I'm tired. I did, I was about to say preached this past Sunday and then I had a paper due the next morning.
Oh yeah.
Which I was pretty, but it was just a lot of work.
What's that like not having your doctorate?
Yeah, it's, that's right. Thanks again for that reminder. If I had all the time, it would have been done a long time ago. It would have been, anyway, I could go on, but it's going great right now. So let's talk about the SBC.
Proud of you, man. You're
Thanks.
Doing good. You're doing
it's
good,
It's a lot
man.
Of work
you're,
right
you're,
now.
You're doing a good job.
Whew.
There's a
Thanks.
Lot of things.
There's a lot of things, I tell you what. But
we need a student pastor.
We need a student pastor. So if you're out there listening, you got to be qualified.
We need one that you don't have to do more work for, actually.
What are you looking for? In one that I don't have to clean up messes for.
Yeah, yeah.
One that is just does great things and I can coach and not have to.
We all
make messes. So.
Not as known, but we're also looking to hire an associate worship minister.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in a conversation we're having with someone, I was like, so there's two things we would need from this role. One, and most importantly, is they need to take things off of Justin's plate. Second is the whole style figure out. But number one, can this person actually take things off of Justin's plate?
Yeah, and not create
plate?
More work. So that is a piece of hiring is this person going to create more work for someone else? And
that's
so
right.
We have to consider all those
that
things.
Is indeed
so,
a consideration. Speaking of work for other people.
But hey, you are, that's right, editing this podcast.
Yes.
You just got back, and so you've got some thoughts. I was able to listen online to did portions of the SBC, and it's all available.
What adjective did you just use there? Did portions. That's what you said.
Yeah. I was able to listen to portions. I started to say to most, but it
people
really
might
wasn't
have thought
most.
You bleeped out an expletive, if you know there.
It could be filled with expletives, I guess. Anyway, I was able to listen to some and catching back up and kind of listening and recapping some things, but you were there. And so we're going to recap some of the things that happened and talk about them. So we're going to frame this around how you tweeted it, actually. Five people who deserve praise for the SBC.
I was going to say five people follow you on Twitter.
You're five followers.
Yeah, thank you.
five reasons for optimism and five concerns moving forward. And so let's just start with the five people who deserve praise from the SBC. The first person you said is Bart Barber.
Yeah.
He's an outgoing president. He's very affable, but also incredibly smart. And
he knew like how to lead the meeting. Yes. Like I've never seen anybody lead the meeting.
So if you've never been to the SBC, just imagine a meeting with 10,000 people, but ruled by Robert's Rules of Order.
Yes.
And so you have to know what you're doing to be able to make things move quickly and not look like an idiot.
Right.
If you're constantly having to, you know, ask, is this the rule? So he knew the rules, but also honored everyone who spoke, mm-hmm. even if they were, you know, just speaking nonsense or speaking a position that even he didn't agree with. He honored mm-hmm. everyone, mm-hmm. I think, who spoke. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, and it takes a ton of prep for that.
I mean, there are some things when he, you know, president isn't just moderating the meeting, you're kind of speaking for the convention. There's some things that people can disagree with, whether or not they like how he did throughout the year. But in terms of moderating the meeting, I mean, just, I can't. The bar is pretty high. I will probably, Lord willing, if we, you know, if I'm a part of the SBC for 30 years in the future, I'll probably always compare other presidents to him.
Because he just did a great job. Yeah. All right. So the next is, and we got to say his last name correctly, right?
Orge.
Orge. Okay. Yeah, Jeff Orge. I-O-R-G, not is that? Oh, that's just his Twitter handle. It looks like Eorg.
It's I-O-R-G. Yes.
Yes. All right. So why? Yeah. Why him?
So, you know, we haven't had an executive committee president for – that's the person, you know, who's basically running the business of the convention throughout the year for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up landing up with him. After two candidates, they looked into – one got voted down and one, you know, they didn't work out. And he's a retired seminary president from Gateway Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has been faithful in ministry and leadership and leads with clarity and conviction. Feels called to it. I mean, he doesn't have to do this.
Yeah.
He feels called to it. And he just really, he's the right guy, man.
You know,
he's
and I think especially given, you know, some of the negative things that have happened with the executive committee and, you know, just over the past, in the past recent years, having someone who you actually have to like, who is he? Look up is probably a good thing.
Right.
Because there's not factions and, you know, all these hands and, you know, exactly.
Right.
So,
no, yeah.
All right. Number three, Dean and Sarah for his clear and challenging sermon. So, I mean, part of the SBC convention, there's a pastor's conference beforehand where there's lots of sermons. And then the actual convention, there's a convention sermon.
Yeah, there's two sermons, the president's message and this. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dean was selected to do that, to give that sermon, not to do that sermon. And did a great job.
Yeah. I'm a little biased. He's my buddy. So, you know, and 2 years in a row, my friends have done the convention sermon. So that was really cool. I don't know the guy next year. So streak's over. But,
oh, well.
He just really challenged us not to get distracted, you know, not to drift liberal, to remember that people fought to get us where we are. I thought it was clear. And credit to him, it was after all this business discussion, and then people were waiting to vote on the law amendment, and he was right in between.
Yeah.
They did like a token song for him, and then he got up to preach.
What song did they sing before him?
I think it was In Christ Alone.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a unifying song.
But it was like not... You needed like seven worship songs to get into the spirit of worship after just discussing all those things.
Yeah, yeah. You need something. And Christ Alone is a unifying song. That's a young and an old song. So, all right. And then number four, you said all six seminary presidents for the way they are leading.
Yeah. What a challenging time to lead a school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With rising costs.
Rising costs. COVID coming out. It just changed changed the landscape of all education, but specifically higher education.
Yeah, and less and less people want to go into ministry. So you've really got to be innovative in how we're getting students plugged into, you know, school, Bible colleges. And so I think
all while navigating like all the different people who want them to teach a specific way or to teach a specific doctrine or interpretation.
Right. And all the criticism.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I just think they're all doing a great job.
All right. And number five, all the messengers, all the people, all the things, all the messages for their kindness, despite what you read on the internet, even disagreement was incredibly charitable.
Yeah. So that's wild that you, like somebody texted me, they're like, looks like things are blowing up there. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't like on social media, you know, and I was like, went on there. I'm like, what in the world? Like, it's fine.
The media
like,
does love to run with this stuff.
I know.
Yeah, I agree. Even last year when things were like heated, you know, it was like there was still like a spirit of just kindness and people were like, yeah, we disagree.
Yeah, but, I mean, there was disagreement, but
yeah, so much of that's just lost in tone online, you know, and not in person, and people just would act differently in person. And
yeah, just very charitable disagreements even. You
yeah,
know?
So, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it's possible to disagree and still be kind. Wow. What? All right. So five reasons for optimism. Let's talk about the positive things. First, you said the growing culture of evangelism as seen by increased baptisms.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not saying we're historically high, but I do think—
Because historically it's been on a decline, yeah, but there is now an
it increase. It is an increase. And I think people are being provoked instead of offended by our culture.
Yeah.
They are seeing our culture and realizing there is a hurting, hopeless, lost culture. Mm-hmm. And they're becoming more serious about sharing the gospel.
Yeah.
Churches are.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen that here.
Yeah, we have seen that
intentional. All right. So more churches taking steps to multiply or partner in multiplication as seen by church planting numbers.
Yeah.
I mean,
I said that great. No, I'm just kidding.
Way to say it.
yeah. No, I mean,
yeah, I mean, churches themselves are, I think what's happening, and this is happening with church planting locally and globally and global missions, I think. And part of this is the vision of NAM and IMB being played out, is that churches are owning more of it rather than just giving money and saying, right, you guys do the work. There is more ownership amongst churches to reach people.
Yeah. One of the, you know, when we made a shift in our cooperative program giving in terms of percentage, we're actually now giving more than we were giving right. them before because of growth. We said, hey, it's so easy to write a check, but we need to make sure we as a church are engaged. So we've like been personally engaged. Our students are about to go up and serve one of our church plants that we're supporting in New York City. Like, you're helping people not just write a check, but to catch the mission. And I think that reproduces itself.
Yes.
And so we're seeing that not just in our church.
Mm-hmm. All right. And this number three ties along with that, a strength and commitment to the nations as seen in Lottie Moon offering and missionaries being sent.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things they always do at the convention is a commissioning of
yes.
missionaries who are going overseas. And that's always an incredibly moving time.
Yes.
Because you hear the testimonies and the call that God has placed on people's lives to go. And yeah, and God continues to work. So praise God.
Yeah, amen.
A growing resolve to be confessional and missional as seen in the votes and networks forming and growing.
Yeah.
Unpack that a little bit.
So confessional, for simplification, is being people who say, hey, we want to be guided by standing firm on beliefs, what we confess as Christians. And missional is saying we want to be guided by reaching people.
Mm-hmm.
And churches tend to be heavy, tend to drift one of the way those ways. Like missional is like, hey, we're going to de-emphasize historic Christian teaching. Not that we don't believe it, but we're going to de-emphasize it because we want to reach more people. Confessional is saying, hey, we care about this so much, we're not as concerned with, you know, or can be,
yeah,
sorry.
I'm tracking.
But we as Baptists are historically both.
Want to be both, right.
And I see that growing, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's why you saw the votes the way you saw them. Like the reason 61% of people were for the law amendment, some not the case, but most is because they are like, hey, we don't want to drift away from the scripture.
Mm-hmm.
I voted no. We talked about that last week because not because of the doctrinal issue, because of the structural issue and other things. And so I think, you know, and the reason we voted that church out, because the guy got up and was like, yeah, we've been ordaining women the pastors. It's like, all right, yeah, well, you know, you're egalitarian. Like,
yeah.
So that, but then also are like, hey, but we know we need to be on mission. And so we got to figure this out. That's just what's happening.
Right. That's good. All right. And then staying the course with abuse reform, it may not be as drastic as someone like, but I see strategic steps to ensure the culture is changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long process. And I do, you know, it does seem like things are moving slowly and it's not as sweeping as people want it to be. And I think there are, it's just not moving as quickly
right.
as one would hope.
Yeah.
But also that you have to, every
That's
step
realistic.
Has to be, yeah, every step has to be wise and every, you can't make reforms that are overcompensating for things.
Right.
And you,
right. reactionary.
Reactionary, yeah. you know, and not that, sex abuse reform is not a reactionary thing, but you can end right. your desire to do the right thing.
Overreact.
Yeah. And so, you know, hopefully it is a continuation of steps in the right direction for what should be happening.
I think that, well, I mean, anytime there's a story of one victim, it's a tragedy. So we can't discount the real pain that one person who's been an abusive, a victim of sex abuse has experienced. I think that now that we've dug in a little more, we've realized that there isn't a problem within the SBC that is greater than other organizations, secular or Christian. Mm-hmm. It's just a sin problem. And we have not dealt with it as we should. And so we do need to get better. I think there was a group that was like, because it exists, we need to blow it all up. Mm-hmm. And there became a narrative that everything got so, even some things got seen through. But the reality is, if it gets all blown up, then these people are going to go into other organizations. So the answer is, how do we create necessary systems so that this happens as few times as possible? And right. when it does happen, it's handled the right way. And I think that by constantly putting it in front of people and by continuing to figure out things, we are making long-term correction. And I'm thankful for the people who continue to bring it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep bringing it up. Yes, absolutely. It's got to continue to be brought to the forefront.
That's obviously a whole podcast
yes,
right there.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. All right, so five things that are cause for concern. Okay.
Well, that was all fun. Now, here we go.
There we go. All right, this is so what one, the decline for. In cooperative program giving. Yeah, it's reality.
Yeah,
it is. And I think the more and more, I think part of the result is that churches are maybe reflecting a little bit of the culture in that if things aren't going exactly the way that church wants, they're escrowing their cooperative program, not giving up. Right. Part of that is like because
churches have left.
Yeah, churches have left. And so in disfellowshipping or churches are willingly leaving or wanting to leave the SBC for various reasons. And then some churches are escrowing their funds because they don't like a direction or a decision that's been made. And some of that could be legitimate. Some maybe not. Mm. Can't speak to those motives, but that's just reality. So it is cause for concern because we want to – we believe that the cooperative program does do good, better together. So
yeah. Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it's a simple answer, but I think that we've got to figure out how we're going to continue to be a culture where people want to give to this cooperative program.
Yeah. You know
I mean, and it's not a biblical mandate.
Yeah,
I think there are people in our church who think it's a biblical mandate that we give to the cooperative program.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not, you know, but but if we are giving to it, then we believe in what we're doing. Don't we want as many people as possible to be involved? And so, So it's on the executive committee to figure that out.
Mm. The role number two is the role of the ERLC in a day with more nuanced political views.
Did you listen to any of that?
I heard a part of this debate, and I mean, this is the part that kind of frustrates me, and I haven't really followed much of what the ERLC has done recently, and that's just because of my own busyness, not because I have any problem or pro for or against. But I do think this is going to be an issue because the SBC and churches, and not just the SBC, but just churches in general, have maybe not done as great a job of separating what is political and what is what we should be concerned with, and maybe confused and blurred those lines to the point where a lot of churches, if you don't approach it this way, then you're wrong. And so, that's not the role of the ERLC. And there's just been a lot going on, politically that may be right, may be wrong. The ERLC has gotten involved in, and maybe they shouldn't have. I don't know. I don't know the answers to all these questions. But I do think that it's going to be an issue for the SBC moving forward, simply because there are a diversity of viewpoints on a number of issues, each of which can have validity.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if it's becoming more hurtful than it is helpful. What they do needs to exist, but I just wonder if it needs to be a part of the cooperative program or not. Because again, one group's really mad that the current ERLC president, which I support, believes let's lead to incremental change for pro-life initiatives. Mm-hmm. But there are people that are mad that they won't say we should criminalize abortive mothers. And those are, again, I have my view on that, but those are two people who are arriving at their convictions because of how they see the issue in the Bible. and the ERLC doesn't speak for, and in many issues, there's multiple nuances. Yeah. So, you know,
I think part of it is the ERLC is almost like set up to fail in that they are charged to represent the Southern Baptist Convention,
right,
which is a bunch of,
right,
a different lot opinions of different viewpoints.
Yep. Yep.
And their goal really is to, I mean, the ERLC is to speak to issues and to try to influence the political culture in our country. But then when you're doing that, representing a people that can't agree on things,
yeah,
you know, it's almost like it's set up to fail,
right,
in that right regard. So it is going to be an issue moving forward that just to watch and see what happens. All right. So number three, the unnecessary division and confusion a lot of resolutions cause. So there are amendments that are voted on by the SBC. And then there's resolutions. And what resolutions are basically, they're kind of like, this is a stance that we want to have that represents the SBC, uh-huh, the public stance. And so
a resolve.
I mean, a lot of the resolutions are like, why are we like, it's a, we resolve to thank the city for hosting us. Okay, that's good, but do we need a resolution for that? Anyway, some of the resolutions this particular time did cause some division and confusion, and mm-hmm, one in particular was a resolution that involved a lot of discussion about about in vitro fertilization. And mm-hmm, so that what gets played in the media is SBC is now anti IVF. So you were there?
Yeah,
I heard a lot of this debate online, but you want to speak to that, mm-hmm, specifically in resolutions?
Yeah, resolution number six, you can look up it online. And it was basically, you know, saying, and I should have just pulled up the actual wording, but there was a point that said, whereas we recognize not all human forms of reproductive science are ethical, you know, but it never said – it gave validity to IVF. It never said that IVF was wrong. Well, then a guy got up and who has been through that and all the suffering and trials and agony that he went through, he's trying to convey in a couple minutes. And he just wanted to modify it to be more sensitive, I think. And then another guy got up and kind of said the same thing. Then a lady, you know, got up and supported the resolution who had adopted embryos and encouraged people to adopt embryos. And my point is, like, no one was even saying each other are wrong, but we're like arguing, but we're not arguing.
Yeah.
And I just don't think these things are helpful.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I would be 100% for no longer doing resolutions, mm-hmm, or narrowing the focus of resolutions.
And correct me from resolutions just have to pass by majority, right?
I think so, yeah.
And so it's like you could have a resolution say like be 51% and then, right, it's like this represents the SBC. Well, no, it doesn't, because there's a lot of people who are saying no to it, and they aren't – basically it's – they can be ways for people to kind of get their pet issue in front of the
– It's weird though. Like people love it.
We don't have time to waste. Like,
it's not, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, all right. So, number four, the growing perception that NAM, the North American Mission Board, is not being transparent. And so, let's talk about that a little bit. Why is there a perception?
Yeah. I mean, for Boggy Talk listeners, I don't know that they care that much about this, but I think maybe the takeaway would be, you know, even if you're not doing anything wrong, when you're constantly hearing the same question over and over again,
you really need to address it,
right? Mm-hmm. Like, I am thankful because people were saying, criticizing that they spent this money on a car, race car. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see the booth. Yeah, yeah. There was a race car in the booth.
Yeah, it was not, it was like a designed race.
Yeah.
It was an actual car, you right know? It was like the shell of a car.
Yeah.
It was a prop.
But also, it's
fine.
An indie, so you see the connection.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it's fine. But like, I'm like, that many people actually thought they would do that.
Yeah.
And they showed, they clarified, right? Like, I think you just need to do that more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if we kept hearing people are saying in our church, like if one person saying,
yeah,
and it's the same
person says people are saying, you're like, well, who? And they're like, oh,
you're
just
saying it to
people.
Yourself. You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
Or just one person said to you. But like, and so I would just say people think that they're hiding things. I have no reason to think they're hiding things, but they keep not answering the questions.
Yeah, that's. It's
so it's arrogant.
Yeah, it just doesn't
at
look
least
right.
Seems arrogant.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
And I just think it's going to become it's sowing seeds of distrust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just be transparent.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be transparent. All right. And number five, lack of qualified young SBC pastors. Yeah, that's true. The we've said it before. The bench is not deep right now.
No.
And I think that's partly, I mean, that's partly culture. That's partly church culture. That's partly just the way it is right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is concerning. Yeah,
we've got to figure this out. Mm-hmm. We've got to call out the called, and we've got to train the called. And this is a big one. When people are 22 out of Bible college, in seminary, or 24 and out of seminary, or 25 and out of seminary, and they have no real experience, we've got to give them opportunities to build experience. Mm-hmm. Because then they get to the point where they're 28 and they have a wife and kid, and they need to make more than the low-level job.
Right.
And so they just don't go into ministry. Mm-hmm. We got to figure that out.
Right. And specifically, I think, you know, this is just a challenge in ministry in general, especially for folks like that coming out of, you know, you have to like kind of know.
3,000 people have looked at that?
Hey, look at that, man.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Anyway, you just have to.
Really? Who cares?
Yeah. You have to kind of be good at a lot of things that no one tells you have to be good at.
Yeah.
And you just have to kind of figure it out. And then when you don't figure it out well, I mean, churches should be supporting in these ways, but there's just a lot that goes into this reality. And so, you know, that's. We as a church want to do better in this and equip and all those things. Yeah. So yeah, it's just reality. The bench is not deep. So
yeah. I mean, there's other things. I think those hit on some of the priorities of the convention. And I would just say that I left encouraged. And we continue to leave encouraged about the future, mm-hmm. but also aware of the challenges that lie before us as an organization or not an organization, as that many churches who cooperate together. Mm-hmm. For organizational purposes.
Yeah. And I think for those in the SBC to recognize, like my brother-in-law texted me, he's like, yeah, it's just the SBC's week, annual week to be bashed in the media. And next week it'll be the next denomination,
right.
Which is true. Like the world loves to stir these things up. And I think you know, you alluded to this in my experience last year. And I think the overall experience is that what the tone you read online is not the tone of the convention.
No.
It could be. Not to say that it wouldn't be, but if you're really trusting Jesus and treating people the way Jesus does, like even when you disagree, you're going to do it in love and you have the same common purpose. And that's kind of the beauty of the SBC is, man, there's some nuts in there, right? Like there's some weirdos, there's people all over the place, but at the end of the day, we confess Jesus Christ as Lord to the glory of God the Father.
Amen.
So, and that's why we cooperate together. That's why we're willing to put up with the crazy aunts and uncles. And
in a nuanced society, it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is hard.
Because because back in the day, they gathered together, they argued, and they left. Mm-hmm. Now they're on Twitter.
Yeah, and they just keep going.
Arguing.
Yeah, and it's just—
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
A lot of them, yeah. So, well— That wraps
I'm glad
up.
We keep our arguments limited to this Boggy Talk.
They're right. Yeah.
We don't argue any other time than Boggy Talk.
Ever. So
we don't really argue.
No. Really. We're like, okay.
I mean,
no, really.
We probably need to argue more because that means we're problem solving. Yeah. We just don't have the time.
Yeah. We're just like, oh, this has got to get done. All
I
right.
Know, yeah. I know.
So, well, is this it for Boggy Talk for this year? It usually is.
Are we taking a break?
I don't know. We haven't really talked about it. So you'll have to stay tuned to that. If we have an episode next week, or
I think we'll do a couple summer ones.
That's right. We usually do. It's usually July.
Let's be hit and miss over
all right,
the next.
Yeah. So, So there'll be new content coming to you in a couple of weeks, and then we'll look forward to a new season starting later this fall. August is not really fall here, but that's typically when we do that.
Sounds great.
This is the state of where we are right now in our planning
decision.
Of things. Right?
I'm agreeing with you.
All right.
I'm not going to argue with you right now.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.